Good morning. It is time to get up with a tough time for Tampa Tom in a thriller with the Rams. What does the result mean for both teams in the NFC? We start there. Then, with the Steelers set to share their Thanksgiving, the Ravens have major concerns with COVID. Can they find a way to overcome yet another obstacle? And then, it goes from bad to worse for Joe Burrow. Why, it may be a long time before we see this young star on the field again. All that and more as we get up with you, starting right now on a Tuesday from the Seaport. Greeny here with you, ready to talk lots and lots of football, and I've got exactly the right crew to do it with me. Let's take a look at who's ready to roll this morning. Dan Graziano is here. Greg McElroy ready to go, and Jeff Saturday is going to sit him down with pancakes a little bit later this morning. But we begin with the game of the night, Monday Night Football. Buccaneers at home taking on the Rams. Could it be a preview of an NFC playoff game? For the first time ever, an all-black officiating crew overseeing the action last night. And here's what they saw. Second quarter, Bucks down 7-0. Third down in scoring territory. It's Brady. It's Mike Evans. It's Mike Evans. Physical, dragging Troy Hill all the way to the end zone. Touchdown. Bucks tie the game at 7. Later in the second, it's Goff looking to answer. Down 14-7. Not anymore. Van Jefferson takes it in for his first career touchdown. We're tied at 14. Rams kick a field goal before the half at 17-14. Now, the Rams. Third quarter. Goff picked by Jason Pierre-Paul, setting up a Tampa field goal. We're tied at 17. Good game. Later in the quarter, same score. Bucks a first and 10. Tom Brady back to throw. Tom Brady, what? Jordan Fuller brings it back 37 yards. Where was that one going? Brady's eighth interception of the season, as many as he had all of last year. Ensuing Rams drive, second and goal at the 4. It's Goff. Cam Akers' first touchdown. Brady's mistake gives the Rams a 24-17 lead. Fourth quarter, same score. Rams, second and 16. Got about 7 and change to play. The one thing Goff can't do is turn it over. Picked off by Jordan Whitehead. Goff's second interception of the day. The Bucks defense coming up big, and they're rowing the boat. Could they row it home? Bucks looking to make it pay in the red zone. This time it's Godwin. Chris Godwin flies through the air with the greatest of ease. What a great view from the pylon cam here. He takes it in. We're tied at 24. Ensuing drive. Just over 3 minutes left in the game. We got a third and one for Goff. His favorite target all night long was Cooper Kupp. Kupp had 11 catches, 145 yards, 19 of them there, putting his team in field goal range. Oh, irony. Matt Gay, originally drafted by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, out here to try and blast one against his former team, and it's good from 40 yards away, so the Rams go up 27-24. But they left time on the clock for Tom Brady, who has led 47 game-winning drives in the fourth quarter or overtime in his career. But then, oh my goodness, what did he do? He just floats that Fuller there for another interception, and that's how it ends. The Rams win it 27-24. Tough night, Tampa Tom.
Brady's made a career out of moments like that. Why do you think he hasn't played his best football against the better teams in the NFC so far?
Still trying to figure that out. I mean, at times we look really, really good, and then there are times when we obviously don't. I felt very, very comfortable in the two-minute drive until that throw.
We've had some chances, definitely, and receivers are doing a great job, and I got to get them the ball, so got to figure out how to do that.
I can see the look on his face. Brady struggling to get it downfield when throwing 15 yards downfield or more. This was easily his worst game of the year. 1-for-9 in those situations with 2 picks. This year, when he has a completion percentage of 45% on those throws, the team is 7-0. When it's below that number, they're 0-4. So the struggles really continue. And let's bring the crew in here. And Jeff Saturday, I'm starting with you. I don't know that anyone in America didn't think when Brady ran out of that field at the end of that game that he was going to find a way to win it. What did you see from him there and all night?
Yeah, he can't make the plays that the team needs for him to make. And he proved that last night. When Bruce Arians is talking about how comfortable he is going into that, I'm not really sure why. I mean, there were plays early in the game that showed you that he really wasn't on point. And I'll show you the plays I'm talking about. Listen, this is one-on-one coverage. You have your best guy, Evans, on Ramsey. He throws the ball out of bounds, Greeny. I mean, look, at least give your guy a shot to make this play, the first deep, true deep ball, and that you throw it out of bounds. That does not give me a ton of confidence. And then right here, this is out in the left flats. I mean, this looks like me throwing it from third base to first base, right? I'm hitting the freaking pitcher mound. I mean, how bad is that? This is not a guy that, I mean, like when you just talked about it, he was 0 for 6 on those throws of 20 yards or more last night. He's getting back to that point where he's not making the throws. There's no confidence in those deep balls. This offense has to have those plays if they want to be successful in the playoffs.
It felt like a little bit of a shocker there. Greg, through a quarterback's eyes, what did you see?
Well, Brady, guys, it was not good from him by any stretch. But part of the problem is the fact that the pressure that they were applying up front along the defensive line was absolutely atrocious. I mean, he has guys in his lap, and he used to be able to pull off those throws that you just talked about, even with guys in his lap. Look, the storybook on Brady has always been, hey, move him off a spot, see if you can hit him. He's going to be a different guy if you can do both those things. Well, he used to still be able to execute those throws maybe half the time. Now, he misses a throw. He has to adjust his arm angle, and it's brutal. But you look at the third quarter, guys. First 20 plays of the game, really nice. The third quarter, y'all, I thought I was watching the Chicago Bears. Ooh. It was absolutely atrocious offensively. The plan was bad. They weren't smart with protections. Brady had no opportunities. And as soon as they took Jalen Ramsey and put him on Mike Evans, they ramped up the physicality that you saw from the Rams secondary, and they had absolutely no answer. I just really, really hated their second half plan and their inability to make adjustments. Brady was off the mark. Bruce Arians was off the mark. The receivers couldn't separate and the offensive line couldn't protect. But other than that, you know, it was a pretty solid night.
Great. So I'm thinking back over the course of the season, the primetime games they've had this year. They lose to the Bears on a Thursday night. They get obliterated by New Orleans. They barely beat the Giants. They may have gotten a fortunate bad call at the end to hold on. And then last night they lose here. And Dan Graziano, you were telling me that you were texting with some scouts and others watching. What were they telling you they were seeing?
Yeah, one thing that stood out to me, somebody said that the Buccaneers coaches are not doing a good enough job on early downs of putting the Bucs in position to avoid third and long, and that they're impatient on offense and it's just pure drop back, and they just didn't see a lot of creativity from them. So I think people are surprised by that, because you think about Bruce Arians as a guy that can be creative on offense and put his guys in position to succeed, but the thought around the league is maybe they're just not doing enough and asking maybe a little too much of Tom Brady to just drop back from center and fire it downfield over and over again. I mean, you know, you're watching the Rams on doing pre-snap motion all night, and you don't see much of that from Tampa Bay. And I think people are surprised that there's not more more interesting elements to that offense.
So, Jeff, let's talk about that. As you're watching it, how much of it is players and how much of it is plays? How much of it is Brady and how much of it is what they're not doing right to put him in a position to succeed?
Well, I think Dan makes a great point about putting them in the position. But at the end of the day, when the plays are there to be made, you have to make them. And the underthrows for the interceptions that Brady is doing, it's one thing to miss a throw. It's another thing to turn the ball over, right, and not protect the football. And everybody understands Bruce Arians has always been a five-step, seven-step, hey, we're going to chuck that thing down the field and make plays. When Brady went there, he understood what was going to be asked of him. The problem is, if you're going to miss, you can't miss with a turnover, right? And so there's things he's not seeing in the defensive backfield, but Bruce Arians is going to have to help Tom Brady, because he's showing you what it's going to look like in the future. You've got to give him more intermediate routes. You've got to help him out. And here's the other point, Green. They got to run the football. You know, they bring in Rojo and they have Fournette. At some point, you got to establish a run and be physical to take the pressure off of Brady somewhat.
So they find themselves, at this point, the Buccaneers in a whole world of hurt. In the NFC South, that feels as though it may be getting hopelessly away now. They're just battling to make sure they get into the playoffs. That's where we wake up
this
morning, coming off of the wrap-up of Week 11 on the NFL. But there's much more to talk about. And Graziano, let me start it with you. Let's run the hurry up through a bunch of different issues, and let's start with the Bears. Who's their quarterback this week?
Well, they don't know yet, Greeny, and Bears head coach Matt Nagy said he has to get everybody on the field tomorrow, Wednesday, and see how healthy they are. We know Nick Foles hurt his hip at the end of the last game they played 2 weeks ago. We know Mitchell Trubisky's been out with a shoulder injury, so the health could make the decision for Nagy. If they're both healthy, he's got a tough call. May switch back to Trubisky just to get a little spark for the offense. Arizona knows who its quarterback is. It's Kyler Murray. They're playing in Foxborough against the Patriots this week. Kyler Murray hurt his shoulder in their last game, finished the game, and the expectation is that he will be good to go this week. Head coach Cliff Kingsbury said yesterday they're going to get him out on the field today, practice today, and make sure he can cut it loose. That's a quote from Kingsbury, so we'll see. But the expectation is Kyler should be fine for this week's game against the Patriots. The Baltimore Ravens will not be fine at running back Thursday night against Pittsburgh. J.K. Dobbins and Mark Ingram both tested positive for the coronavirus, according to Baltimore coach John Harbaugh. That means they have to be out for 10 days at least, and that means they won't be able to play on Thursday against Pittsburgh. That Baltimore running back room going to be very, very thin for a game the Ravens absolutely have to win. And looking ahead, they play next Thursday, too, so those guys would be in danger of possibly missing two games, depending on do they show symptoms, how long it's been since the test, etc.
Let's take a look at some of the numbers here. The Ravens lead the NFL in rushes per game and yards per game, and Dobbins and Ingram are a huge part of that, around 42% of the team's total carries and yards. Here's John Harbaugh, still confident that his team can stay aggressive on the ground Thursday night.
The run game is always a group effort. All 11 guys are involved in that, certainly. And, you know, I'm sure we'll run the ball on Thursday night.
You know, people say it all the time, you got to trust the process. But, you know, we've been working for so long. It's going to happen. I'm telling y'all, it's about to happen. You know, I'm confident in this team. We just got to keep on going, keep on trusting. And it's time to go show the world what we can do.
Okay, so a lot to unpack, again, ahead of what is a really important game. And Graziano, let me quickly start with you again, because I'm sure when this story came down yesterday, positive tests, game is 3 days away, there were fans wondering, well, is the game going to be played? What is the answer to that question?
As of now, the answer is yes. Obviously, we'll await further tests. What they do is they identify everybody's close contacts and test them. And if you start to see something happen, like we saw earlier this season with Tennessee, where there was a team-wide outbreak, then maybe there's talk of postponement and rescheduling. As of now, the league is planning to proceed with that game as scheduled on Thursday. We'll monitor the testing results throughout the week.
All right, so that's that side of this story. There's a whole other side of the story. And Jeff, let's pick it up there. And that is that the Ravens, who bullied everyone in the league last year, have been on the other side of that this season. They got bullied in their own building by the Tennessee Titans on Sunday. And that created a lot of conversation on this show yesterday about just what the Ravens are. As you watch them, Jeff, Saturday, what are they?
Yeah, a mediocre football team. I mean, when you talk about the expectations of what this team was and is, you know, I just heard Edwards. It was almost comical hearing him, hey, we're right there on the edge. Well, what makes you believe that? I mean, other than that you're on the team, I understand you got to say it. But at the end of the day, this team is not physical on either side of the ball. And that's the scary part, right, is the offense. We know they've had some offensive linemen go down, Stanley and Yanda retired. And so it's been more difficult for them to be physical on offense. But they can't sustain drives. But that's now leaked over to the defense. And I get Campbell and Williams have been out. But at some point, where's the nastiness of this football team, right? Where's the team that just comes hits you in the mouth and doesn't care and shortens games and does all those things? There's nothing there about that right now. So when you talk about, hey, we're right on the cusp of turning this thing around, there's no arrows pointing to that direction for me. And that's the problem. When you talk about Thursday night against that Steeler defense, those boys are going to get after you. So you better be able to run the ball. It may be a heavy dose of Lamar Jackson running it or giving some RPOs, but something's got to change about how physical and nasty this Ravens football team plays.
Yeah, they don't have that from last year, and they don't have a quarterback who is having an historically great season. So, Greg, I turn to you. As we watch it, what is the right thing to say about where Lamar Jackson is right now?
Well, you had to go quite literally two plays into the game on Sunday to see Lamar Jackson's not seeing the field very well. Right now, it's, you know, a situation where he's not very accurate. He's not making great decisions. If you look at some of the throws and the decisions he's making in the passing game, you're sitting there and you're seeing guys open on the field, and yet he's trying to force balls into windows down the field that are really low percentage plays. I'm not saying don't be aggressive, but understand too situationally that you guys are struggling offensively.
That's right.
So the second you get off schedule, you're in trouble. He tries, look at second
That's
and seven,
right.
Second play of the game. He tries to force one into Willie Snead, almost gets picked off by a dropping corner. He's got Hollywood Brown sitting there at the sticks for an automatic first and 10. You see that show up time and time again. And then it's not exclusive to the passing game. He's making bad decisions in the run game. And then on top of it all, his receivers aren't helping them out. Right now, guys, they are tied for 29th. Tied for 29th in the NFL in regards to drop percentage. The only teams worse than them are the Cleveland Browns and the Green Bay Packers. So they are not a team that's catching the football with any consistency. And if they've got a quarterback that's not seeing the field well, when he does deliver it in the right place, you better bring it in for him.
Listen, I'm old enough to remember when our analytics said they were favored in every game this season, and we were wondering if they might go 16-0. Now, all of a sudden, we're wondering if they might be on the outside of the playoff picture looking in. In other news, yesterday, Adam Schefter and our Bengals reporter Ben Baby reported that Joe Burrow tore his ACL, his MCL, and suffered other structural issues in his left knee after injuring it Sunday against Washington. Yesterday, here on this show, Rex Ryan had the following thoughts about the injury to Burrow.
He's had more drop-back passes than any quarterback in the league. That's how you're going to handle a rookie quarterback with a horrible offensive line and a bad football team? That's not what you do to this kid. We love this football player. Let's protect him. I think it was reckless in the way they handled him. And look, it's unfortunate. I know the coach is remorseful about it now, right, but we saw it coming the whole season.
You know, he wasn't the only person I've heard say that, and we should put some numbers to it. Joe Burrow did throw more passes at the time he was injured than any other player in the NFL this year. Starting as a rookie, he dropped back to pass more times than any other player, and he was on pace to become the sixth rookie to take 50 sacks in a season. That's a list that includes David Carr, Tim Couch, and Blake Bortles. So those are the facts and the figures. Jeff Saturday, you heard what Rex said. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a bad take. I mean, I understand looking back, you second guess, oh, man, he had this catastrophic injury, and we're all praying for him. It's devastating to watch. But the reality was, or is, that he gave your team hope, right? Every Sunday that he ran out there, you felt good about your chances being a Bengal fan and a Bengal teammate. And he gave you the best opportunity to win. That's why you draft him first in the draft. You don't draft him first to go let him watch guys go play. And the way that he played demanded that he be on the field, Greeny. I mean, when you're talking about a guy who's showing up every Sunday and performing to the level he is, you're going to bench him because ifs and maybes? Like, that's not the way football works. And I understand when you're looking back at how this could hurt the franchise and all those things, but this kid was doing, he was playing above what everybody had expectations for him to do. To act like that we weren't cheering this guy on for how well he was playing the entire season, and then all of a sudden this awful injury happens, we're going to change our idea of, oh, he should have never been playing. This kid should have been playing. It's awful. I hate the injury, but you can't have regrets about putting your best player on the field, and that's what he is for the Bengals.
What do you think, Greg?
Well, here's my thing. What do you do? Put him in bubble wrap for 10 years and then hope he's a great player at 32? Like, the way you get better is by playing. The way you get better is by being put in adverse circumstances. And they just talked about it. Rex hit the nail on the head. You know, well, we got a bad offensive line. Well, how the heck do you want him to move the football? You want him to just run it down people's throats? Like, what are we talking about? Yes, the only way the Bengals were going to win games this year, or, you know, be competitive, is by dropping back and throwing it 50, 55 times a game. That was the only way they had a chance to be competitive. And by the way, they were competitive. They were 2-5-1, but really, they only got blown out twice.
That's right.
There were only two games in which they had no chance to win. So they were in almost every game. And to consider this team what they were just a year ago, how much they've turned it around, in large part due to what they were doing with Joe Burrow, I just don't know how you can be critical.
That's
hindsight's 20/20, but I think I agree with Jeff. I think it's a bad take by Rex.
I understand what you're saying. I think there's more to it than meets the eye. We could talk about it further, but Graziano, I think it is important to get into just what the injury means. So we know now a little that the injury is more significant than your run-of-the-mill clean tear. I don't know if I'm using the right terminology there. We'll have Stefania Bell a little bit later with the details. But what do we know about when we might expect to see him again?
Yeah, the timetable we're given is these injuries generally take 9 to 12 months. Adam Schefter had that in that report as well. So that, calls the start of next season into question. When you look at potential comparisons, Deshaun Watson tore his ACL in practice his rookie year. He was back for the start of the following season. But I don't think there were other ligaments affected. I could be wrong, but my memory says no. Carson Wentz had a multi-ligament injury in December of 2017. He missed the first two games of 2018. Remember, they're coming off the Super Bowl, and they started Foles at the beginning of the season. So Stefania can speak to this, whether the injuries are potentially similar. But he comes back at some point next year. It's just too soon to know for sure if we're talking about week one.
We will get that medical insight a little later in the program. We are just getting started. Going to be a very busy morning. Coming up on Get Up, is it time for the Eagles to bench Carson Wentz? You'll hear one of our analysts say escaping from Wentz will be like escaping from Alcatraz, and he will explain. Then, speaking of the bench, did Brian Flores make the right decision telling Tua to take a seat? You've got questions, we've got answers as we continue. And speaking of questions, I have a poll question up right now on my Twitter page at ESPN Greeny. If you had to bet money on it, which has a better chance of happening? The Steelers go unbeaten or the Jets go winless? I hear the laughter in the room. None taken. Back in a moment. Get up on ESPN. Come on, get up. We are back on Get Up, and here's a nice gesture here. Marshawn Lynch and his Fam First Family Foundation helped hand out 200 free turkeys to people in Hawaii ahead of the Thanksgiving holiday. Just one of so many athletes giving back at this time of the year. As we continue, Carson Wentz has had a lot of rough games this season. Sunday may have been his worst. Who's to blame for the failures? Is it time for him to see the bench? We'll talk about that. Plus, if I told you one of the two teams playing last night will wind up in the Super Bowl, which one would you pick? We'll talk about that and more as we continue. Get Up with you on ESPN. We are back on Get Up, and if you're just joining us, here's a look at what happened last night. Buccaneers, Rams, Monday Night Football. Tom Brady up and down all night. Third quarter tied at 17. Brady looking, Brady throwing. What? Jordan Fuller with the pick, 37 yards. Brady's eighth pick of the year, as many as he had all of last year. Rams would score on the ensuing drive. They make it 24-17 LA. Fourth quarter, that's still the score. Jared Goff threw an interception, giving Brady and the Bucs a chance, and Chris Godwin takes advantage. And they tie the game up at 24, under 2 minutes to go. After a field goal had given the Rams a three-point lead, Brady in under 2 minutes looking to win the game, and he just floats one. Fuller, another pick. Brady's second interception of the game, costly, and the Rams win 27-24. Now, every week our friends at Subway ask us to bring you the good calls. Good calls brought to you by Subway, and the Rams defense made some good calls last night, particularly in the second half, just shutting down the Buccaneers. Brady threw for just 90 yards on double the amount of pressures in the second half, threw two interceptions after throwing none in the first half. So we come out of last night's game, a game that I sort of led into saying could easily be a preview of an NFC playoff game or even the NFC championship game. So let's do this. Dan Graziano, I'll start with you. If I told you right now that one of the two teams we watched on Monday Night Football last night is going to wind up in the Super Bowl this year, which one would you bet it will be?
Coming off of last night's game, you have to say the Rams, Brad. They look like the better team. Tampa Bay looks like kind of a mess. And when you think about it in the big picture, the Rams were in the Super Bowl 2 years ago with a lot of the same people, whereas the Buccaneers team that they're putting together this year, you know, some guys are still getting to know each other. So I don't think it's completely ridiculous to look and say that the Rams would have the better chance. They play very good defense. If Jared Goff can throw the ball that much and as effectively as he did last night, then that's something they have going for them that we haven't seen much this year. But they definitely look like the better team. Right now, they would be the two seed.
Greg McElroy, which of last night's two teams would you bet money would wind up in the Super Bowl?
It'd be the Rams, and it's because history repeats itself. Guys, we just have to go back 1 year, and the similarities between the 2020 Rams and the 2019 San Francisco 49ers are very real. Let's go through the checklist. Young, offensive-minded head coaches, check on both. You have a very talented, however, somewhat of a liability at quarterback. Jimmy Garoppolo was that for San Francisco. Jared Goff, at times, has been that for the Rams. You have an unbelievably dominant and disruptive defensive line. We already know what the 49ers had last year with Bosa and company, and then you got Aaron Donald, maybe the best defensive player in the entire league, if not for Jalen Ramsey. Jalen Ramsey's very much in the mix. Physical, ball-hawking secondary that can really disrupt the rhythm of the passing game. We already know the result of what San Francisco did last year. They were just a miraculous comeback from Patrick Mahomes away from winning a Super Bowl. What will we see from the LA Rams? But things and the parallels between those two teams are somewhat there. I do worry though about Goff. I mean, I don't know how else to say that. He made a couple of really bad decisions last night. The Rams could have run away with this game if not for him making some terrible decisions in the pass game. And that defense, man, they were disruptive the entire night. So I really like what I've seen so far outside of the occasional bad decision from Jared Goff.
Look at you making fancy full screens and everything to illustrate your argument. Jeff Saturday, I'm telling you right now, one of the teams we watched last night is winding up in the Super Bowl. Which one are you telling me it is?
Yeah, the Los Angeles Rams. As much as it pains me because I've been a Bucs apologist for the entire football season, but what I saw last night was disheartening. And I'll say, because when you look at their offensive line and the ability to protect and keep that pocket clean for Tom Brady, it just has not been there, Greeny. And so you're watching, we've talked about, this has been the book on Tom Brady really his entire career, and it's every pocket passer. If you move him off his spot, but the concern for me is the deep ball, and that's what Bruce Arians wants to live on. Brady's not doing it well. As much as it pains me, I'm going Rams at this point.
All right. Well, you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again. Mine is that rare genius that will not be fully appreciated until long after my time. The correct answer here, of course, remains the Tampa Bay Buccaneers because they have Tom Brady, and someone needs to go into Bruce Arians' office, and I think that someone is Brady, needs to walk into his office and say, you know what? You're getting this all wrong. It's time to let me get it right. He's got to stop flinging the ball down the field. It is evident, and you guys have talked about it all morning long. He can't do it. That offense that he runs is not the offense they should be running. So, in my opinion, it remains Tampa Bay. They just need to start playing Tom Brady's brand of football rather than Bruce Arians' brand of football. Meanwhile, on to our next issue. Dan Graziano, Overreaction Tuesday. We got one for you today. The Eagles should bench Carson Wentz. The world is screaming it. Is that an overreaction or not?
It's an overreaction because, look, it's not like they have, you know, Joe Montana or Steve Young sitting on the bench. The guy who's backing him up is a rookie that we really haven't seen play the quarterback position yet. There's no way to know for a fact whether Jalen Hurts is ready. The Eagles coaches probably know that better than any of us do. And Carson Wentz is the guy they have to get it fixed with because long term they got significant commitment to him and the franchise would be in big trouble if he can't turn it around.
But we'll pick up on that thought in a moment on the contract, but just look at the numbers. His QBR below the league average. Only Drew Locke has a worse completion percentage. He's been sacked 40 times. He's turned it over 18 times. Both of those lead the league. Here was his coach, Doug Peterson, yesterday.
Jalen is preparing himself each week to play, and that's what a backup quarterback should do. My perspective is that we have to get it fixed with Carson Wentz, and we have to. That's where my trust and my faith lies, and we can get it done. And that's where I'm at. But I, by no means am I saying that I don't have trust or faith in Jalen. It's a matter of getting the corrections done with Carson.
All right, so let's start at the top. Greg McElroy, I know you've put together some tape. Through a quarterback's eyes, what are we seeing in Carson Wentz right now?
Well, it's certainly less than ideal, Greeny, but here is exactly why Carson Wentz should not be benched. There's enough good in what he did. How about this? Three-man rush, meaning you know you got eight dropping back in the coverage. So what do you have to do? You either wait forever in the pocket, but with that offensive line, you kidding me? No chance. You got to change the launch point, allow your receivers to uncover. He does so beautifully. By the way, it was pouring rain. I don't know if you guys knew that. How about this right here? Hard play action. He sees his tight end win immediately, gets rid of the ball really quickly and beautifully. Really accurate throw. This is a hard play action. A seven-man protection, Jeff Saturday. Tighten up front, please. He's got to get it out in less than 3 seconds before he gets his clock cleaned. How is that on him? By the way, it was raining. I don't know if you guys saw that. And then here, man-to-man coverage. All right, he recognizes that. And he sees the matchup. You got a linebacker against a tight end. That's advantage us every single time. you get Mack Wilson against Rodgers. Oh, by the way, another guy in your face. You got to throw it off balance off your back foot. Perfect location. Really nice throwing the football. And by the way, in case I didn't mention it, it was a downpour. Can we stop overreacting to the fact that he didn't have his best stuff on Sunday? Who the heck would? Under those conditions, it was pouring rain, it was an impossible circumstance, and it's not all about Carson Wentz. The problems around him are very evident. The offensive line is leaky as can be, no pun intended with the rain, and The receivers really aren't that great to begin with. So I think they got a lot of things to tighten up. Their quarterback's the one piece that I still do trust.
All right, that's well done. But the reality of it, Jeff, is that, yes, the problem with Carson Wentz has never been that we don't see the spectacular plays. You see the spectacular stuff. It's the huge mistakes that kill him and kill his team sometimes. Jeff, what are you seeing?
Yeah, he can't anticipate any throw. And listen, you can talk about all the quarterback factors you want. Anticipation's got to be top on your list, more than arm strength, more than athleticism, because if you can't anticipate, you can't throw guys open. And I love the tape that Greg just put together, but let me help you with offensive line. Their offensive line has not played well, but 32 of the 40 sacks that have come on Carson Wentz have been after 4 seconds, Greg. 4 seconds, brother. You can't block that much. That means you're not anticipating a throw, dude. I don't care if it's raining or not. Can I see that the guy's running out in the flat and I want to double pump and then throw it so the guy can take it and pick six? That's got nothing to do with the offensive line. And listen, I'm not trying to say that there's other areas of the football team that need to be fixed, but Carson Wentz is a $100 million man. If he is part of your problem on the Eagles, That has to be the last problem. I mean, are you kidding me? Like, you've given him all the money. He can't be part of the problem, and he is. His anticipation, his hesitation is absolutely killing this offense. And again, you're holding the ball that long, it means you don't know where to go with it. So either he and Doug need to get together or they got to make a change. Something's got to give, because at this point, it's not getting better. You're literally watching a sinking ship because of all the rain, Greg. That's what you're watching.
Okay, that's very well played. To sort of put a ribbon on the conversation, I mentioned, and Dan, I used the line from you, that to escape from this, if the Eagles wanted to, and we don't know that they do, would be like escaping from Alcatraz. Dan Graziano, tell everyone why.
He's got $30 million coming this year. He's got a fully guaranteed $25.4 million coming next year. As of this coming March, 4 months from now, a $15 million roster bonus for 2022 becomes fully guaranteed. If they cut him this year, it's going to be a $60 million dead cap hit. If they cut him in the 2022 offseason, it's a $40 million dead cap hit. They are stuck with Carson Wentz. They have to get it fixed because, frankly, that is a lot of money to pay a guy to not play for you. And it's also a lot of money, Greg McElroy, to pay a guy that can't play in the rain.
Okay, we will leave it there. We could put the show on the Weather Channel. We had so much rain conversation. All right, as we continue, we're talking about another quarterback. We will tell you why the Dolphins made a very big mistake, and it had nothing to do with Tua. See if anybody agrees. Next, Get Up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
We're back on Get Up, and we're going on the clock with our crew of analysts here. And Dan Graziano, I'm starting with you. I'm putting 30 seconds on the clock. Who is the most overlooked quarterback in the NFL this year? Graziano, go.
It's Deshaun Watson in Houston. Remember, they traded his best receiver. They fired his coach. This is a guy who's operating at as high a level as he ever has in his career. He's on pace for career highs in yards, in touchdowns, in completion percentage. Look, they have an inexperienced play caller running the offense in the wake of the Bill O'Brien firing. They've been trying to mix and match with the run. Sunday, we saw them put an entire game plan on Deshaun Watson's shoulders, and he was absolutely electrifying. If the Houston Texans had a winning record, he would be in the MVP conversation.
I'm so glad you said that. That is extreme, a point very, very well taken. Greg, you're next up. Who's the most overlooked team in the NFL? Go.
How come nobody's talking about the Indianapolis Colts? I feel like we're always, for instance, like when I look and I look at the game from Sunday, it's more about who lost and why they lost than it is the Indianapolis Colts. This is a team, guys, by the way, that lost to the Jacksonville Jaguars in week one. But since that game, they've gotten a little bit better and a little bit better and a little bit better. Phillip Rivers is starting to resemble the Phillip Rivers that we've come to know and love over the course of the last decade and change. And we have a defense that is really sound at all three levels. So this is a team, guys, that is quietly doing a lot of damage in the AFC.
Two for two. I completely agree with that one as well. Jeff, you're next up. And for you, we have a question. Was Brian Flores right to bench Tua on Sunday? 30 seconds, go.
Absolutely, he was right. Listen, when you talk about Brian Flores, what two messages did he send to his football team? No one guy is bigger than the team, right? Tua, he's 11 for 20, 80 yards. He's getting sacked because he's not letting the ball go. What do we decide to do? We're going to give our team the best chance to win because we're still in the hunt for the AFC East. So we're going to bench him and give Fitzpatrick a chance to bring a spark. I love that. What else does it say to your team? That Tua has the mental fortitude to put up with this and move on and still be the guy they're depending on in the future. I love both calls by Brian Flores. Great job by him. Couldn't agree more.
Okay, so that's really good. And it sets the stage for something I was talking about on the radio yesterday, and I saw that there was some disagreement with me, so I am going to not only double down, I'm going to triple down on this opinion. Guys, I want you to see if any of you want to change my mind. There are three teams that are going to regret not taking Justin Herbert in the draft this past year, and they are in the order in which they selected: the Washington football team, which has clearly given up on Dwayne Haskins. How good would Justin Herbert look running that team right now? The Detroit Lions, who clearly are going nowhere and need to start over. How good would a young quarterback like him look there? And the Miami Dolphins. This is less a statement about Tua than it is about Herbert. Right now, if you're starting a team with any young quarterback in the National Football League, league. You would consider Herbert. He's been that good. Greg McElroy, do you want to change my mind?
Let me just caution you here. RG3, Vince Young, Mitch Trubisky went to a Pro Bowl within his first couple years. Nick Foles was the best quarterback in the league under Chip Kelly there for a season. These are all guys that were exceptionally good early in their career. Josh Freeman, and the list goes on and on. Exceptionally good early in their career before, boom, plummeting. I'm not saying that's going to happen with Justin Herbert. I think he's been exceptionally good, far better than I ever expected him to be, at least at this point in his development. But I don't think we need to jump to these concrete conclusions this early. There's just too much time from where they're going to be really evaluating who these guys are 6, 7, 8 years from now. So yes, while the early returns, Greeny, have been fantastic, I just caution you, there have been a lot of great young quarterbacks that come crashing back down to earth sooner than later.
No, I've said this many times. I am a professional overreactor. Jeff Saturday, do you want to change my mind?
I can't change your mind. Listen, I love this kid's confidence, and I love his trust in his receivers. Like, you know, if you watch this game on Sunday, this guy threw some darts. Keenan Allen's not open in the end zone. He throws him as he's battling with his DB. The little drop in. Look at this little drop in the bucket toss right here. He sees he's got good coverage. He puts it out there. This kid, look with his eyes, Greeny. He goes down, pulls a corner down, and throws a dart. This is the play I was just talking about. Watch this throw to Keenan Allen, and when he lets it go, he's covered. What am I going to do? I'm going to throw it open. That's anticipation. Hey, Carson Wentz, Greg McElroy, watch that tape. I can't disagree with you.
Jeff, the difference is it wasn't raining. Okay, outstanding. I think if there's one thing we establish here, it's clearly that I'm right. Let's move on. College football, we go next. After Florida State abruptly postponed its scheduled game against Clemson because of a positive COVID test, Dabo Swinney ripped into the school's administration, Florida State's, for that decision. Yesterday, the coach at Florida State, Mike Norvell, responded.
Football coaches are not doctors, and some of us might think that that we are, but there's there's a reason why those advisors and are able to make the decisions from the information that is provided, and it's unfortunate that opportunity is now been delayed, but there is a reason that those protocols and the people making that decision have that job and responsibility.
So this is messy. Heather Dinich and Paul Feinbaum, as always, with us. Great to see you guys. Heather, who's right here? Is Dabo right in what he's saying?
Well, Greeny, look, you can argue all day who's right here, but I can tell you this. The ACC missed its chance to exert some authority so that you didn't have to play the role of judge in this. When it happened behind the scenes, the ACC should have made some sort of decision and public statement that was stronger than the one that came out. They've been silent since this happened, and it's escalated into a family feud. The second point is I expect them behind the scenes to come to an agreement to play on December 12th. And the third point, Greeny, is even if they didn't play, it doesn't matter because the College Football Playoff Selection Committee is not going to leave out Clemson if they win the ACC and finish as a one-loss conference champ just because they don't play Florida State, just like they're not going to leave Alabama out if they don't find a way to play LSU.
I get it. And so I think your point is a good one there, that someone should have stepped in and not let it get this kind of publicly messy. So, Paul Feinbaum, I will come to you. Who looks bad in this, Florida State or Dabo for saying it the way he did?
First of all, who's right is Heather. She's 100% right in terms of what she said. But I don't think Dabo looks that bad. And I know the media pundits all over the country, Greeny, are assassinating him because it's the easy thing to do. I mean, Dabo is not making a proclamation against COVID safety. He just wanted to know why we didn't have a football game Saturday. We spent $300,000 going down there, and nobody could make up their mind. So I don't have any problem with him standing up and screaming and hollering because he wanted to get that game out of the way. He doesn't want to play that game on December 12th, 1 week before he has to see Notre Dame in the ACC championship game. So in the end, the ACC created this disaster. And the fact that they still haven't said anything is shameful.
Okay, fair enough. Heather, meanwhile, let me come back to you here, and I will ask this question in advance. I will say the right answer is Northwestern. The first set of college football playoff rankings will be unveiled tonight. What storyline are you watching for?
Well, as much as I know you want me to say Northwestern, I'm going to go ahead and say Cincinnati Greeny, because who's on the bubble is the biggest question. I think the top four in whatever order should be Alabama, Notre Dame, Ohio State, and Clemson, your typical teams. But then how high do they rank the Bearcats? Because if you're looking at them on paper, they actually have a stronger case than both Texas A&M and Florida, which leads me to ask, does the committee honor the head-to-head result of the Aggies over the Gators, even though Kyle Trask and the Gators have looked phenomenal lately? So I think those 5, 6, 7 spots are going to be the most interesting tonight.
Okay, fair enough. So if by Cincinnati you meant Northwestern, I agree with you. Paul, same question. What are you watching for tonight?
Well, I am watching for Northwestern, Greeny, because I want to see what the committee values that win the other day and how seriously they are taking the Big Ten other than Ohio State. Now, having said all that, let me make it easy on you, and I'm going to declare right now, if Northwestern wins out, and I think they will until they get to the Ohio State game, and then beat Ohio State, they are going to be in the college football playoff. There are no debates, no doubt, and nothing can change my mind, especially since you wrote the script for me.
That's why he's the best in the business, folks. Heather, Paul, thank you both very much. We'll see you tonight as we work our way towards this 7 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. The exclusive reveal of the college football playoff top 25 rankings. Reese and the guys breaking them down top to bottom. We'll have coaches' reactions and a live interview with the committee chairman. That's tonight, 7 Eastern on ESPN. All right, coming up, rough night for Tampa Tom. Our analysts have big concerns after watching the GOAT last night. We'll tell you what they are as we continue to get up with you on ESPN.